Call Me Maybe. A Guardian Story. Written by Joe LaSalle and read by Kelly Curia. This story has been rated explicit, contains the pairing Shen Wei, Xia Yin Lan, and has been tagged No Archive Warnings Apply. Reader's Note. I am doing my best, but I am so sorry for the way I'm sure I'm garbling everyone's names. Summary. A story in which Xia Yin Lan is good at paperwork, Shen Wei is an unreliable borrower of clothes, and the black-cloaked envoy needs better occupational health and safety provisions. Xia Yin Lan strides into the university, breezy as can be. He doesn't stop at the main entrance, and he doesn't stop at the turn to the biology department, and he doesn't stop to think about how less than a few months ago he would have been excited, not just determined to not be caught lurking. There's a queue of students outside the door. Of course, office hours. He knows Shen Wei's office hours because they're on the internet, not because he spent a couple of weeks using way too many work hours and even more non-working hours to trail after the good professor, or in any case he used the internet to confirm, because at some point he had to cut his losses, and now his knowledge might be a couple of weeks out of date. Sorry, he says to the girl on the front. There are a lot of girls in this queue, and gives her the kind of apologetic smile that makes her cheeks turn a little red. I'm here in police business. Gotta jump this queue. Then he knocks on the door and enters. Shen Wei looks up from behind his desk with a sharp flash of irritation, which turns into a gratifying moment of shock, until he smooths out his features into mild professorial confusion. Yeah, Xia Yin Lan's seen that one before. The student in the visitor's chair, early semesters, cute, put on a skirt for this, is clutching a folder to her chest and looking disturbed by his sudden entrance. Chief Zhao, Shen Wei says, rising very smoothly. He's wearing a white shirt and the fucking sleeve garters. I'm in the middle of a consultation. Is this urgent? No, Xia Yin Lan is just barging in because he felt like seeing a good professor and wanted to have a chat. Well, not that he'd do that now, anyway. I'm so sorry, he says regretfully. Police business. Can't wait. There is also no way Xia Yin Lan was going to stand in a queue like he's one of Shen Wei's besotted admirers, so too bad, but Girly has to leave. He gives her a winning smile, which makes her clutch her folder harder, but she stutters to her feet, and, after checking with Professor Shen, she rushes past him, leaving a mild trace of flowery perfume. The click of the door does nothing to Shen Wei's expression, which stays perfectly bland. Have a seat, please, he says, gesturing. After Xia Yin Lan has claimed the visitor's chair, he lets slip a flicker of appropriate concern. Given previous cases, I hope whatever brings you here is nothing grave. Oh, it's no dead students or anything, Xia Yin Lan says, leaning back in the chair. He's following every twitch of Shen Wei's face out of habit, not because he really thinks that after all this time, Shen Wei will really let him see anything of value. I'm relieved, Shen Wei says, the way one is relieved that there are still staples in the stapler. It'd be funny if it wasn't sad. It's only because I haven't seen you in quite some time. Xia Yin Lan leans back in the visitor's chair and gives him one of his best smiles. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, Professor Shen, doesn't it? Like the rest of him, Shen Wei's smile is also polite. I assumed that your caseload was lighter these days, and I was glad for it. The Dixing situation has calmed down somewhat. The Dixing situation is what Haixing Inspectorate calls tense, and what Xia Yin Lan calls a clusterfuck, but he's not telling Shen Wei that. Xia Yin Lan can turn random shit into secrets, too. Yeah, if not for this random case, I might actually take a vacation, he says. Someone with more refined sensibilities might point out that he's being bitter and pathetic, but Xia Yin Lan's interactions with refined people are pretty limited these days, and Professor Shen doesn't really have stones to throw on being pathetic. Shen Wei's extremely even and extremely polite features show at least a ripple of interest. But your new case did bring you here. Xia Yin Lan gestures widely, maybe to point out that Shen Wei is being really obvious. Yeah, and I'm afraid it has us a little stumped. You know, I really hate to bother you, but for the sake of the city... Shenwei nods, very much for the sake of the city. How can I help you? He throws his arms over the back of the chair, putting himself just that bit more on display. There's a brief stillness in Shenwei, better than any twitch. We've had a series of strange occurrences, and I'm pretty sure Dishingren is involved, but I can't figure out what their power is supposed to be. Shenwei nods in a very focused, tight way that could almost make it convincing he hadn't noticed Xianlan crossing a foot over his knee and letting the other knee sprawl. As you know, I'll be happy to help if I can. How do these powers manifest? Well, Xianlan says, on the surface, the cases aren't even connected, and it was only a third one that got the SID involved, but I'm finding it too strange for it to be just a Haixing problem. Shenwei nods in perfect professorial cooperation. The first case, or what we think is the first case, was a man in his 60s who kept digging up his garden at all hours of the day. Shenwei is still maintaining his mask of stillness. It annoys Xianlan all over, because it's not like having a human reaction to a bizarro story is going to reveal Shenwei's deepest secrets. Eventually, the neighbors tried to intervene and there was a scuffle, and the guy had a heart attack. He's still in hospital. Then there was a 30-year-old woman who all of a sudden started playing the violin and wouldn't stop. From Dishing? Nope. 100% human. When you say she wouldn't stop... Xianlan wiggles his fingers in the air. Until her hands were bleeding. A tiny line appears between Shenwei's eyebrows at the unpleasant image. She's still alive. She's in the psych ward of Dragon City Hospital. They took the violin off her, Xianlan says. When we connected the dots and I went to talk to her, she was basically lucid and couldn't understand she'd been acting strange. Said she needed to get the melody just right, but apparently the urge has started fading. Shenwei gives a small nod. That must be a relief. She can't pin down what started it, though, Xianlan says. She tried to help, too, clear-headed enough to understand he wasn't an enemy, but everything she could tell them about the start of the violin obsession was murky and useless. Could she play before? Ah. Xianlan wags a finger at the good professor. You do know to ask the right questions, he says with a respectful bow of his head. She hasn't played the violin a day in her life. A year of field piano classes when she was 10, she said. That's it. A frown flickers over Shenwei's face. It would be an oddly specific power to be able to turn someone into an obsessive violinist. Shenwei voices exactly what's been driving Xianlan nuts about this one. I can't think of any parallel since I joined the SID, Xianlan says. It also doesn't sound like Xu Zhu. No. Xianlan shakes his head. That pest is still a regular customer, and Xianlan thought of him out of habit, but teleportation really isn't at the heart of any of this. Shenwei is clearly running through something in his mind. Focus looks good on him. Always has. Damn. What's the third case? He asks. The one that got it on your radar? It would be so easy. They just fucking clicked. Embarrassingly easy, really. To slip back into the back and forth and let himself forget that he's a police chief and that this is a guy who guards whatever his secret is so well that 4 weeks of excessive snooping got him nothing but long expenses bill and enough frustration to power Lin Jing's lab for a month. Someone's controlling people's voices, he says, finding his cool back. Shenwei is a resource. Xianlan can't let it get under his skin. Mind control. Xianlan tilts his head. Apparently, the people affected can tell what's happening. They just suddenly have things coming out of their mouths that they don't mean to say. We had 2 disciplinary hearings start at a government agency because people gave illegal instructions to their underlings before somebody got a clue. That sounds closer to a Dishing power, Shenwei says. He seems to have forgotten all about his office hours, which makes Xianlan feel a little better about his own sucker moment. That's what I figured, he says generously. Ever heard of who or what it might be? Shenwei takes a breath in that way that says he's going to disappoint Xianlan. Not as such, I'm afraid. It sounds plausible, but offhand it does not sound acutely familiar as something I've come across. I'd have to consult the literature. That's what I've come here to ask you, Xianlan says. By this point, any information is going to help. I'll definitely see what I can do, Chief Zhao, Shenhui says. You still have my number. Zhao Yunlan says in a chipper voice, gesturing at Shenhui's office phone like he absolutely doesn't mind waiting to hear from Shenhui in her professional capacity and would never feel self-conscious about waiting for any other reason. Your assistance is greatly appreciated. Shenhui nods earnestly. All for the sake of the city. He does hope that Shenhui can maybe dig up something useful, as all his leads are on the frustratingly vague side, and the next person spouting the wrong orders might be someone more important than the deputy personnel chief at Haixing Inspectorate, or have more access to guns. Shenhui gets up when he does. The brief awkward pause is mutual, Shenhui looking briefly unsettled as Zhao Yunlan zips up his leather jacket and flashes him a grin, totally ignoring the perfect fit of Shenhui's white shirt and gray pants. Okay, then. Zhao Yunlan says cheerfully. Good luck with your research. Apologies. One question. Shenhui asks. He seems to have averted his flash, and his expression is blandly inquisitive. Shoot. How do you connect the cases? He asks. Right. That. Shenhui continues. While I can see the manipulation of the mind being a common denominator, the actual circumstances strike me as quite different. How did you put it together? Zhao Yunlan wonders if Shenhui missed it too. But at least be something. Three weird things in close proximity, he says. That, and the mix of obsessive behavior and something close to mind control that's ringing every alarm bell Zhao Yunlan has. He's tempted to wink, which would make sure Shenhui knows he's holding something back, but that would be counterproductive for getting information out of him, and Zhao Yunlan came here to be responsible. The cop's instincts, you know. I see, Shenhui says. That would make sense, I suppose. No follow-up, a fast concession. Maybe he doesn't miss it. Zhao Yunlan finds an appreciative smile. I'll see myself out, then, he says. Thanks for your help, Professor. It's always a pleasure. He lets that land, holding Shenhui's eyes invasively enough he thinks he sees a crack in the mask in the way Shenhui blinks. Then he nods towards the door. Want me to send in your next case? What? Your students, Zhao Yunlan says. Office hours. Oh, Shenhui says. It is a sad fact that being flustered also looks good on him. Yes, please do. Zhao Yunlan gives him a sloppy fake salute and saunters over to the door, and he isn't depressed or anything until he's shooed in the wide-eyed girl first in line and closed the door on Shenhui in the continuously open question of whether he does lead a secret life as a part-time villain or is, in fact, just a sexually repressed awkward professor who missed his shot. Damn that guy. Zhao Yunlan marches through the elegant university corridors with enough purpose that students swerve out of his way and quietly curses Shenhui's cheekbones. And his eyes, and his infuriating polite smile, and his fucking sleeve garters. And he never did get that jacket back, either. For all his fancy suits and professorial whatever, Shenhui really has no manners sometimes. Nothing I could find out about the merit brush suggests that these are its normal effects, the black-cloaked envoy says, his eyes skimming the photographs scattered over Zhao Yunlan's desk. The merit brush was an interesting idea, though of course that was something else Zhao Yunlan didn't mention to Shenhui. Right now they're back to going in circles over which Dixing power could make someone really into gardening and also take over people's voices. Zhao Yunlan looks at the picture of the violin girl with her hands bandaged up and her face full of anguish because they wouldn't let her have the violin back. Zhao Yunlan still isn't quite ready to let the theory go, because as soon as the envoy mentioned the awakening of powers, his instincts latched onto it. Could the descriptions of the merit brush be wrong? Zhao Yunlan asks. Or incomplete? He gestures at the sitting group, where helpful Wang Zheng has left them tea. The first time the envoy sat down in his office, it felt like they were suddenly in a costume party, and everyone was acting weird. The envoy always stands, tall and foreboding. Now the envoy actually drinks tea on occasion, even though he still sits in the armchair like it's a throne. It isn't sparkling conversation, or the careful but sizzling back and forth of two people testing the waters, but at least the envoy's around. That is possible, The envoy says in his slow, deliberate way, I have no personal experience with its effects, after all. Records can be wrong.
What's your gut feeling?
Zhao Yinlan asks. He can practically picture old Chu having a seizure if he heard, but the envoy only seems slightly thrown. Ever since he started hanging around the SID more, he seems to have adapted more to how regular people talk. Or to how Zhao Yinlan talks. The envoy averts his eyes, seems to stare at the carpet or into space. He tends to do that when he thinks things through. I don't think the records are wrong, he says when he's come to a conclusion. Something else is going on here. He looks back at Zhao Yinlan, very seriously. That is my gut feeling.
Cute!
Zhao Yinlan can't entirely stifle a grin.
Did I say something wrong?
The envoy asks, probably not quite as smoothly as he's wanting to be. It's surprising how often the envoy, when he isn't trying to be all menacing bringer of justice, seems to get worried he's stepped over some line.
Not at all,
Zhao Yinlan says,
and my gut feeling's the same, not that I've read your records.
Then he sobers up. It sounds an awful lot like back to square one. The portal crackles as it closes on the black-cloaked envoy and the rogue Dixing thief. Zhao Yinlan sticks his hands in his pockets and breathes in the night air. Some immobilization trick the envoy used has left a faint trace of sulfur.
You don't think this was related, do you?
Old Chu asks him. He's holding his left arm. The thief jumped out at them and tackled Old Chu to the ground before the envoy could appear, despite the envoy's new penchant for timeliness and helpful early arrivals.
Nah, Zhao Yinlan says. That guy was stealing, but he wasn't stealing himself into a frenzy.
This was just some run-of-the-mill guy from Dixing who got cocky from getting away with things. He nods at Old Chu's arm.
You gonna be okay?
Old Chu raises his eyebrows like it's a ridiculous question. Zhao Yinlan raises his hands in return.
Just making sure my subordinates are fine. They're fine,
Old Chu says with an audible eye roll.
Are we heading back?
You go on ahead, Zhao Yinlan says easily. Expense the taxi. I'm going to make sure everything's properly calm around here, and I'll see that those people whose table you knocked over don't lodge complaints about hard-working and extremely charming police officers. He shows Old Chu the exact face he's planning to use. He gets him an actual eye roll as a response.
Right. See you tomorrow?
Sure, Zhao Yinlan says.
I look forward to your report.
They chase the guy from a busy street of sleazy bars to the docks, which are almost deserted this time of night. Apart from the original tackle, which broke a table and a few glasses and made Old Chu smell hilariously of coconuts, Zhao Yinlan thinks they didn't do too much damage, the SID might have to explain. He saunters along the waterline in the general direction of the car, figuring he can deal with the bar incident tomorrow. He's not in any particular hurry, and he doesn't have anywhere else to be. He doesn't even start when the air around him condenses in an abbreviated storm, and slivers of lightning flicker around the envoy's solidifying shape. Zhao Yinlan tilts his head, his hands in his pockets, and smiles.
Good evening, Brother Black. Long time no see.
The envoy stills, looking caught the way he gets whenever Zhao Yinlan comments on the fact that he now apparently likes to drop in for post-arrest debrief and chats, and Zhao Yinlan regrets that he never knows when to keep his mouth shut.
I sent Old Chu home. He's gonna be fine after he's had a shower, he says,
smoothing their way past the awkward moment.
Thanks for intervening.
It's part of my duties, the black-cloaked envoy says. When Zhao Yinlan picks his gentle walk back up, the envoy falls into step. This hanging around after a case is closed isn't part of the envoy's duties, or at least it wasn't last time Zhao Yinlan checked, but this time he actually doesn't let his mouth run away with him.
I take it everything went smoothly with the processing over there,
he says, gesturing into the air randomly. He feels weird pointing down for Dixing. The culprit will be punished appropriately, the envoy says, his face in the shadow of his hood.
Good, good,
Zhao Yinlan says. He's really just showing that he also cares about the envoy's day. The envoy doesn't talk much about what Dixing is like beyond the immediately relevant, but every once in a while he's gotten carried away and let slip some fascinating, if disconcerting, things about the shithole Dixing must be. Tonight doesn't seem to be one of those, though.
Shyamalan leaves him be. "I'm worried about our voice mystery villain," he says, not changing his easy pace. 3 days ago, he got wind of a disturbance inside Haixing Inspectorate, something about unauthorized access to a secret lab, but Shyamalan's contact, a secretary who likes him much better than she likes his father, didn't have the whole story, and officially someone just had the flu. My instinct says the incident at Haixing Inspectorate was an attempted attack.
Your gut feeling?
The envoy asks. The hood is a rude inconvenience, but Shyamalan can hear the small, rare smile.
That one, yeah,
he says, his own smile turned toward the night sky. It's not that Shyamalan is short on human interaction, or, well, human and Yashu and Grumpy Dishingrin interaction, but it's nice to talk to someone he's not in charge of or responsible for.
But you said nobody out of place was caught or seen at the site,
the envoy recaps.
The whole bureau is practically wallpapered with security cameras, so yeah, whoever tried this tried it from somewhere very far away,
Shyamalan says.
Which, see above. I'm worried.
Your theory that this might have to do with the intensity of the power is hard to prove, but would explain the criminal's capabilities at a distance.
Shyamalan sighs, not even bothering to hide it.
When his cop senses first started tingling about the violin girl, he'd started wondering if the voice trick guy had somehow manipulated the violin girl and the gardening man up close, and that's why they'd gone nuts, while he could pull off simpler tricks at a distance. It's a slippery theory with a bunch of holes in it. It'd be helpful to have the science perspective on this. Maybe he kept the wrong thing from Shen Wei. Then again, the part-time villain possibility is still on the table, and while Shen Wei is probably not their secret voice conductor, or else most of Dragon City would be talking a whole lot more proper and stilted, he's still the one who's making it impossible to just go to him. He doesn't want to be thinking about Shen Wei.
I think we should try to draw him out, Shyamalan says. Or her. This sitting around in the dark waiting for someone to start babbling nonsense isn't a good approach to investigating.
The envoy is thoughtful, silent for a few steps. The wind carries over shadows of rowdy laughter from the bars, the moon reflecting off the water.
How would you draw him out?
The envoy says. I doubt they will let you set a trap in Haixing Inspectorate.
Yeah, we'd have to think of something,
Shyamalan admits. Something that makes a good target. Something a Dishing attacker would find hard to resist.
Please be careful, Chief Zhao, the envoy asks in his deep, measured voice.
I'm always careful, Shyamalan says.
You are hardly ever careful, the envoy corrects him, with a hint of exasperation that makes Shyamalan laugh.
I actually meant to ask you, he says. He hesitates briefly because for all their recent chats, the envoy is still an official ambassador of Dishing, not someone he can just press into service.
Would you help us?
It's always my privilege to help you, the envoy says.
Yeah, but... I mean no disrespect to your position. I know you don't work for the SID, but we don't even know what we're dealing with here. And instead of you having to show up in a rush because your crisis sensors are going off, or, you know, however you do that, maybe it would make sense to have you there from the start. Like, coordinate.
Okay, great. He feels warm in the face now. It sounded a lot more babbling than he anticipated, and he can't blame it on any Dishing power messing with his voice. The envoy is facing forward, not breaking step, and that hood is really frustrating now. It makes Shyamalan twitchy. But the hood sways a little on a sideways glance. It's not a smile exactly, but close enough. I believe I can coordinate with the SID, he says.
I'm under attack!
The connection is tinny, old Chu's voice sounding choked.
They have the merit brush here! I need help, Chief!
Shyamalan's heart is pumping with adrenaline. This is it now. He feels everyone's eyes on him, everyone but old Chu, who they sent ahead to secure the road. The SID is secure behind the shield, the street empty of innocent bystanders, Daqing lurking under the armored car.
Help me!
Old Chu is shouting through the crackly line. Shyamalan hadn't anticipated the phone, but it's clever.
Where are you?
He shouts back into his phone and motions for Lin Jing to lock up the armored car. We'll come get you.
Chief, what about the holy tools?
Guo Changcheng is saying, his voice shaking. Hong Chu was loud. Shane Lin makes a split-second decision to stick with the plan.
You stay here. Everyone else with me.
He impresses the importance on Guo Changcheng with a solemn nod before he waves his arm at Zhu Hong and Lin Jing to follow him. He breaks into a reasonably fast jog that Zhu Hong can keep up with, and that doesn't exhaust him, and they make it around the corner, then pile into a narrow alley, where they stop.
This is it, right?
Zhu Hong says. Old Chu doesn't talk like that. Cheyenne Lan shakes his head with a grin. He most definitely does not.
Text him,
he says to Lin Jing, just as dark thunder cuts across the sky.
Tell him to come back, we're on, and then ignore everything he says.
You mean like you always do?
Zhu Hong says. Her cheeks are a bit red with excitement. It's cute.
Let's go,
he says, and rushes out of hiding and back the way they came, drawing his gun as he sprints. Zhang Yinlan has put all his not inconsiderable knowledge of bureaucracy to use to make damn sure that between all the road closures and traffic permits and special vehicles and special vehicle parking permits and hazardous material transport permits and hazardous material access permits he applied for, somebody, somewhere, would figure out they're moving dangerous and valuable artifacts. Like the holy tools. Or like a box that could, in theory, contain the holy tools, and in practice is crammed full of every old knick-knack they could find in the evidence room that has a ring of dark energy about it. The envoy had contributed a pair of gloves that made Lin Jing's dark energy detector nearly curl around itself. They're nice gloves, too. He intends to return them to the envoy. In front of the SID, the envoy is throwing back a bolt of blue energy at their least favorite purple-haired twerp.
Of course.
Zhang Lin stops, his feet skipping on cobblestones, aims his gun at Xiu Zhu, but Xiu Zhu has noticed them, and there's a blip, the envoy's attack hitting a brick wall as Xiu Zhu disappears and pops up again next to Zhu Hong. Zhu Hong dodges first, and then throws her power at him, Zhang Lin steadying his gun and trying to get a good shot. He misses. Behind him, he hears heavy steps running, and then white puppet strings come flying past him and towards Xiu Zhu.
Zhang Lin, I'm in deep distress!
Old Chu says, a very entertaining disgust at his own words on his face. The strings miss, but as Zhu Zhu has to dodge him, Zhu Hong kicks him sideways in the knees and he cries out as he stumbles.
It's two!
Guo Changcheng's voice.
Chief Zhao, there's two of them!
The fuck? Adrenaline spikes high as he tries to locate Guo Changcheng. Yes, fine, he's cowering near the SID entrance like he was supposed to, but two? Two what? The envoy's cloak is swaying as he turns left and right, and then meets Xia Yilan's eyes. Two attackers. Where?
Why are you not saving me?
Old Chu is hollering as he's sending more strings toward Zhu Zhu. And good. He's got Zhu Hong's back, and Xia Yilan is scanning the square, the armored car, the corners, the rooftops.
Up there!
He shouts, raising his gun both for cover and distraction, and the envoy looks up. A gray-haired man with an angry expression raises his hands toward Xia Yilan. Zhang Lin fires, calm and steady, and the guy jerks sideways, hit but not out. Instead, he pushes forward with both hands and the air ripples, something green and glittering shooting toward Zhang Lin, and then suddenly there's black fabric, waving in front of his face for a moment before the envoy topples into him.
Impact!
The envoy's been hit.
Are you hurt?
He shouts, grabbing the envoy by the arm. But the envoy stands straight again with his back to him, sending another bolt of energy toward Zhu Zhu, who stumbles backwards from the hit, takes in all the SID members with a jerk of his head, and maybe finally gets a clue that there are no holy tools here, and disappears at the crack.
Old Chu, get the one on the roof!
Zhang Lin barks, and while that guy was lucky with Zhang Lin's bullets, he doesn't have teleportation, and the puppet strings fly fast. Zhang Lin looks around. Zhu Hong is okay, only slightly ruffled, looking fierce. It had been her in the end who'd pointed out the thing that always brought the Dixing foes to the party was the holy tools, and that they should present an opportunity to the merit brush holder to steal the dial and the awl. Hong Chu's got the suspect tied up like a spider's lunch, lowering him down from the roof and only bouncing him against the side of the building a little. Hong Chu might not want to open his mouth until the voice-dubbing interlude is fully over, but he looks unharmed, too, landing their suspect and then securing him with the more mundane handcuffs. The envoy's panting, leaning slightly forward.
Fuck.
Zhang Lin almost stumbles, reaching for him, even as he's still trying to find his voice.
Sir Envoy, are you hurt?
His heart is hammering against his ribcage.
Are you okay?
I'm fine, the envoy says. He's straightening up again, slowly. This was a Yashu attack. The man's not from Dishing.
Yashu? Since when are the Yashu in on the holy tools hunting? But you got hurt.
The envoy is shaking his head. The cloak is swaying again. I can absorb it. It's not like...
Shailan really wishes he could call, like, some Dishing doctor and have him make sure the envoy's telling the truth.
I know what happened, the envoy is saying, and his voice is steady again like he's caught his breath. The Merebrush activated a new power in normal humans, but Shuju cooperated with the Yashu to make it more extreme, make the power stronger.
The obsession,
Zhaiyinlan says.
The Yashu attack made the violin girl go extreme.
Yes, the envoy says. There's a shimmer in his eyes as he's looking at Zhaiyinlan, and his mouth curves into a smile. Not even hidden by the cloak now, and not shy.
And with the voice control, it acted like an amplifier.
It occurs to Zhaiyinlan that whoever took charge of Old Chu's voice is still out there, and is perhaps a victim in this whole affair like the crazy gardener and the violin girl.
A what?
The envoy asks. He's taking a step toward Zhaiyinlan, who isn't sure what for. His eyes are dark behind the mask, more intense than Zhaiyinlan's ever seen them, more direct, and Zhaiyinlan feels an odd shiver that criminals probably experience at the envoy looming in front of them as the envoy takes another step towards him, one hand coming up.
The envoy freezes, blinking at Zhaiyinlan, then at the ground.
Back at him, and he seems to sway, but then his head jerks away and his voice is firm.
I have to go. The Yashu...
The Haixing Inspectorate should handle it. It's not my jurisdiction.
You aren't hurt, Zhaiyinlan.
I'm great. Zhaiyinlan says.
Can't you...
The portal darkens the afternoon sky, silver and white and black, and in a blink the envoy is gone. The actual voice conductor is eventually picked up by regular police in a shopping mall. Apparently he was stumbling around with a lack of orientation, saying something about needing help and wanting the box. He gets referred to them because even the regular cops know something was going down at the SID today, due to Zhaiyinlan's beautiful garden of special permits. The guy is a confused teenager who vaguely remembers having conversations with people he never saw face to face. I think I called them? He says, terrified even though Zhaiyinlan went into the interrogation soft and didn't unleash a still pissy Chu Zhuji on him. The envoy's unusual departure is still in Zhaiyinlan's mind, but maybe whatever effect the Yashu attack had on him is something he needs to sleep off. Their Yashu culprit has been taken to Haixing Inspectorate, and Zhaiyinlan is happy to have them sort out the diplomatic entanglements. He's helping dismantle their fake holy tools box and taking custody of the envoy's gloves. What's going to happen with him? Zhu Hong says with a nod toward their interrogation room. He didn't sound like he knew what he was doing.
Zhaiyinlan sighs. I'll have to keep him somewhere until the power fades. I think he still doesn't know what was going on with him.
At least if the violin girl is any indication, an eventual fading out seems to be a realistic possibility, now that the double whammy of Zhuju and the Yashu guy are no longer around him.
Better for him if he doesn't actually figure out the finer points of his current power,
Zhaiyinlan adds. When he gets to his office, he has a message. Xin Wei's office number.
Of course.
He hesitates for a few weak seconds before pressing the button.
Hello, Chief Zhao. I'm calling to let you know that unfortunately, I could find nothing relevant to the cases you described in the literature. I'm terribly sorry. I hope you are well.
So very, very polite, and so very useless. Well, it doesn't matter now. One culprit down, one at large, and the confused pawn at least not dead or permanently harmed. Could be better, but could be worse, and the mystery's done.
Yeah, I solved it without you,
Zhaiyinlan mumbles, and only judges himself a little. He places the envoy's gloves on the side of his desk and drops himself into his chair, breathing out in a huff. It's fine. He's fine. They all did good work today. The plan worked, and could maybe be a blueprint for future cooperations. And he'll give those gloves back all nice and proper. Like the responsible police chief he is. The black-cloaked envoy doesn't show for a week. Then two. First, Jianlan figures they don't have an acute case. The envoy usually has at least a pretext for dropping in, and who knows what red tape they are all entangled in because the SID and the envoy arrested a Yashu. Then he gets a little worried. He calls Minister Gao to ask if anything is happening in Dixing he should know about, in terms of, as he puts it, the power structure, but Minister Gao is confused by what he means. The black-cloaked envoy was here on Friday to sign some documents, only briefly. He seemed pressed for time, but didn't mention any changes relevant to our diplomatic relations. Minister Gao says, secure in not having any administrative processes disturbed. So the envoy's fine. Well, that's good. Jianlan leans back in his chair and stares at the gloves, still sitting there. It's not like he has any business getting ticked off at the black-cloaked envoy for not dropping by to chat, but would a check-in after their big joint mission really have gone amiss? Jianlan rubs his shoulder as he drops himself into the office couch, groaning. You should go see a doctor, Zhihong says, without interrupting her typing. It's more a reflex. Nothing he has to take seriously. What's he going to do? Tell me to take it easy and give me pills? You're already great at taking it easy, Deqing says, and Jianlan pretends to kick him. He had rather artfully thrown himself into a wall when he lunged for their suspect, a small fry Dixingren counterfeiter, and old Chu had been disrespectfully amused by it the entire car ride back. Their counterfeiter is now sitting in their interrogation cell, secure and lunging special handcuffs. It wasn't particularly dangerous, more like a beat cop chasing down a pit pocket with a bonus wall interlude than a true emergency, so it's not weird as such that nobody felt the need to butt in and save Jianlan from his own momentum. In any case, the counterfeiter is ready for shipment, and Jianlan's shoulder is bruised worse than his ego, and neither is actually bruised very much. Chief Zhao, phone for you. Wang Zheng calls out to him, standing at her desk. She lowers her voice to just audible across the room. It's been ringing in your office for a while.
Who is it?
Wang Zheng is making a brave face. The head of Xingdu Bureau would like to talk to you.
Oh, great. Given that they had an actual case, he probably can't pretend he's not in, can he?
He waves at Wang Zheng and rolls to his feet to take the call in his office.
Yes?
Jianlan, did you secure the contents of the suspect's apartment?
His father says. As guilty twinges go, this one is positively mild. Less than his shoulder pain, even.
Lunjing is still over there, collecting the evidence, he says. We're planning to bring it all over. Why?
Please make sure your subordinates don't treat this callously again,
Zhao Xinqi says. Apparently, it turns out, the counterfeiter is working on some government documents and might have originals at home that need to be carefully traced. Jianlan listens to a long list of how he could fuck this up, and then promises to do his best not to. When he gets back out, half his team is assembled in the main room. Wang Zheng is just handing old Chu stamped documents.
The big, serious, stamped documents.
No fucking way!
What happened?
He snaps at them.
The Lord Envoy has taken the criminal back to Dixing,
old Chu says.
And you didn't call me over!
He hollers. He's so pissed off he's not even going to take it out of their paychecks. He's going to strangle them.
The Lord Envoy was in a hurry,
old Chu says with that infuriating pointedness that says Jianlan better think twice before criticizing the wisdom of His Highness.
It was a straightforward transfer, like we did it before.
Old Chu had been the one handling liaisons with the envoy for a while before Jianlan first met him, that day at the university. It's not our jurisdiction, boss. Deqing says. You know we can't stop him.
Did he seem okay?
Jianlan asks before he can stop himself. It gets him some suspicious looks, but he doesn't care. This is fucking weird. Old Chu looks like he wants to bristle at the question, but is a little thrown by it, too.
I don't waste the Lord Envoy's time, he says. It was business.
Then, reluctantly,
he didn't say much. Like I said, he seemed in a hurry. I didn't get a good look at him.
Jianlan stares at them in ongoing disbelief. After everything, after the mission, after the fucking tea, the envoy is sneaking official business past him to avoid running into him. What the actual fuck?
He waits that night until everyone but the ghost has gone home. Old Chu keeps giving him strange looks, but in the end, Zhaiyinlan threatens him with having to write the counterfeiter report, and old Chu finally goes home. And Wang Zhang is his girl and won't blab about him if he asks her not to. He lights the incense. He sits in his office, pre-darkened for a dramatic envoy entrance, and stares at the curling wisps of smoke, and can't decide if he's more worried or more pissed off. Clearly, the envoy is still carrying out his duties. Whatever's going on, it can't be too bad. He's really pretty sure of that. And he's pissed off that that part of him that is a little less sure is screaming bloody murder in his head. Where is the damn envoy? And why is he picking now, of all times, to give Zhaiyinlan the cold shoulder? What if this was an actual emergency? The incense keeps smoldering, ash and smoke almost making fun of him, and no envoy. He's spent entirely too much fucking time waiting for people to answer phone messages or incense sticks. He didn't do it on purpose. He's not actually that much of an idiot, and he draws his line of pathetic at deliberately risking his neck to get someone to answer a fucking call. So it's an unlucky fortuitous coincidence that Xiu Ju decides to ambush him in a classy backstreet alley after a night of equally classy drinking, flinging him through the air so high Zhaiyinlan actually thinks he might be done for. He lands on a pile of classy garbage bags, nothing broken, no hit on his head, thank fuck, rolls and scrambles into the cover of a door entrance as black energy zaps through the air, exploding one of the garbage bags. It stinks of rotten chicken and swamp, and his stomach lurches from booze and adrenaline in combination. He fumbles for his gun, then remembers, of course, he didn't take it drinking. Fuck. His head is clear, at least. The booze fog lifted by the scare of sudden air travel. This must be a revenge thing. He's not even carrying any of the damn holy tools, he thinks, wondering how Juju found him, wondering if anyone else can find him, someone like... There's a rush of air as it makes room for the presence, a cold taste in the swirling breeze, and the envoy is standing between him and Juju, an angry ball of energy swirling around his raised hands. Some hard, knotted tension inside Zhaiyinlan shivers and fades, though he still swears he didn't do this on purpose. Wants to actually know how, and is maybe better off not knowing how. Even at this distance, Shuju's face looks pissy and sneering, a little unwell in the blue glow of the envoy's power. He has his hands up, behold still. Zhaiyinlan scrambles to his feet, still keeping his cover. No need for unnecessary injury, but he's ready to run or jump or help if he can. A bolt of energy comes flying towards the envoy, who stumbles from the impact, sending Zhaiyinlan's heart into a frantic jump. But then the envoy's counterattack cuts through the darkness, and Juju disappears with a plop in the air, the envoy's energy crackling over a concrete wall, white tendrils over rude graffiti. Zhaiyinlan swerves around, expecting the attack from behind, and he hears the envoy's cloak swish in the air as the envoy does the same. He draws closer to the envoy, checks left, right, up. It's a few frantic heartbeats in a still, damp alley before they realize Juju has given up for now. He turns to face the envoy, who's standing still, his hood shielding his face.
You okay?
It was not an effective attack, the envoy says. Are you hurt, Zhaiyinlan?
No,
he says, then moves his arms subtly just to make doubly sure. No, he's okay. He even got around the worst of the garbage smell.
Thanks for stepping in.
No need to thank me, the envoy says. He seems to waver over something, a half turn towards Zhaiyinlan, and then a freeze, and Zhaiyinlan is biting down and asking him why the fuck he hasn't been answering the incense burner, but he thinks that might be mildly inappropriate in this backstreet that's already seen a little too much supernatural action tonight. Then the envoy turns away. The portal opens like a slash in the sky, more menacing for the tightness of the street, and Zhaiyinlan reacts on instinct.
Wait,
he says, taking two quick steps and grabbing the envoy's arm. The envoy's head whips around, and Zhaiyinlan catches up with the lack of respect he's showing, a sort of hot shame he hasn't experienced since getting mouthy with his favorite teacher in middle school. He almost lets go, because it's wrong. No. Something is wrong. The envoy is breathing hard, face darker than usual, and he seems to sway in Zhaiyinlan's grip rather than pushing him off or blasting him through a wall.
What's going on?
Xianlan says.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing, the envoy says. I'm fine. When he twists his arm slowly in Xianlan's grip, it looks like he's playing the part of offended royalty, but doesn't quite remember how. As far as lies go, it's not the most unusual one, and Xianlan has sung that song himself, but right then and there, he's had it, envoy or no.
Bullshit. You were gone for 2 weeks, and now you move like you're drunk. You're not fine.
It is nothing you should have to worry about, the envoy says, and this time even his slow and ragged strength is enough to break free of Xianlan's hold. He steps back. Xianlan follows, and feels heat in the air where the envoy just was. What the fuck? Xianlan grips the envoy's shoulder, and this time he notices even through the cloak. The envoy's hot with fever, the darkness in his eyes a dazed shimmer.
What the hell is going on?
Xianlan asks.
Are you sick?
The envoy shakes his head, slow as if underwater. It's fine, he says. I just need...
Xianlan would be happy to hear what the envoy just needs, but he seems to have no fucking clue, his eyes pinching shut behind the mask and his breaths coming unsteadily.
Don't lie to me,
Xianlan says, on a spike of anger that takes even him by surprise. But he doesn't need this. He knows nothing about the envoy and how sick he might get, and what it might mean, and whether he'd even know what the fuck happened if one day the envoy just stops showing up or is replaced by the green-cloaked envoy or the blue-hatted envoy, and he's had it with the fucking lies. He knows it's not fine. I never meant to, the envoy says thickly, another slow shake of his head. Xianlan isn't sure he knows he's doing it. But you should go. I should go.
Like hell,
Xianlan says. Above them, the portal crackles and then fizzles closed, like the envoy can't hold it there. It's freaky and ominous.
You're burning up.
He feels the heat on his hands even before he touches skin. And when he commits possibly the biggest diplomatic faux pas in Haixing history and presses the back of his hand against the envoy's neck, he almost gasps.
We need to cool you down,
he says, hesitating for a final moment because this is the black-cloaked envoy, and even while feverish and stumbling around should probably be treated with some respect, but the black-cloaked envoy is also not allowed to burn himself to a crisp. With a small tug, Xianlan pushes the black hood back on one side. The textured brim falls half over the envoy's head, revealing a dark hairline. The envoy gasps, but Xianlan has made up his mind and only shivers a little at what he's doing. He changes hands, holding the envoy up by his other shoulder, and pushes the hood the rest of the way back, onto the envoy's shoulders. The envoy has short hair, tousled from the hood, damp with sweat. Messy strands stick up around the silk band that holds his mask in place. He looks so mundane and human and tugs oddly at Xianlan's heart. The envoy is shuddering, his head dropping forward. You shouldn't touch me, he rasps. A twitch goes through Xianlan's fingers, but he doesn't let go of the envoy's shoulder.
I'm sorry. I want to do what you want, Xianlan says. But you'll fall over. Tell me what's wrong.
I can't.
Yes, you fucking can. I'm the fucking Lord Guardian, the goddamn chief of police, and I haven't done anything but trust you. So now you tell me why the fuck you're stumbling around in the street looking like you're having a heart attack or heading for spontaneous combustion.
He shakes him a little, scared when he feels how little resistance the envoy can muster. The envoy tenses with resolve, and then suddenly it just goes, his head dipping forward, a heavy, burning weight on Xianlan's shoulder. There's a pause, the envoy breathing against him. It was the Yashu attack, the envoy mumbles. It works differently on me. When it hit me...
Xianlan has upgraded to actual serious fucking concern now. What does he know about Yashu powers, or what they might do to a Dishingren, or to an envoy?
His hand comes up without a thought, brushing over the envoy's damp hair.
How bad is it?
Xianlan says.
How can we fix it?
We... The envoy shudders again. You...
He can do something. That sounds like he can do something.
What? What can I do?
The fever is... Because you...
The envoy is still holding himself still enough that Xianlan doesn't think he's literally incoherent.
Because me what?
He's a little shocked when the envoy's hand, half covered by black embroidered fabric, reaches for his elbow, not to push him off, but to hold on. The envoy's breaths are coming short on Xianlan's shoulder. Xianlan decides to give him 10 more seconds before...
The attack makes someone want... Makes someone need... I fought off most of it. I thought I could do it. But it just got... The envoy's breath is barely a whisper. It's supposed to torture. Makes you insane if you don't get what you need.
Xianlan clutches him tighter on instinct, thinking of the violin girl and her bandaged hands.
Torture you how?
The envoy's hair is wet under his fingers, the band holding the mask in place soaked through. Even in the uneven light, Xianlan can see the flush on the envoy's skin wherever it's exposed, and the heat shining off him is dizzying.
What need?
He startles when the envoy reaches for him somewhere at his waist, clenching a fist in Xianlan's jacket. But then that touch is gone again, the envoy all but hiding his hand behind his back.
It builds on what you can't control, the envoy says in a slow daze. I thought I had more control, but it made it worse.
It's like watching someone read the manual all the way from the intro, including the advice about not leaving hot plates unattended, and failing to get to the actual instructions.
Seriously, Brother Black, you're taking a long time to get to the point here, and I can feel you burning a hole in this wall. What do you need me to do?
The envoy is getting heavier on him, like he's giving in to something, or just really can't stand up straight anymore. There's one long, painful sounding breath.
It requires contact.
Xianlan thinks of fever and sweat and of that aborted grip on his waist and the envoy slumping into him, and puts it together. He always figured the Ashu had the capacity to be big pervs.
Contact isn't skin contact. Anyone will do.
He hopes it doesn't have to be a fellow Dishingrin or whatever, as he starts shrugging out of his jacket on one side, his other hand steadying the envoy.
Not anyone, the envoy says. There's a long pause.
The envoy's body heat flickering around them.
Is this the bad news? Will he have to get old too?
The envoy's head lifts off Xianlan's shoulder, slowly, and for all that weight gone, the envoy's hands are now clutching Xianlan's arms. For a moment the envoy meets his eyes, but it looks like work and pain and apology all in one, a glazed need that makes Xianlan shiver again, until his stare falls somewhere on Xianlan's chest.
It is you. He says.
Oh. Okay, that's great,
Xianlan says.
Better me than someone not actually here, right?
The envoy shudders, and then some remaining strength seems to go out of him. Xianlan props him up as he slumps forward, and nudges him back against the wall, into the shadows where he took cover from Zhu Zhu. He manages to get one of his arms out of his jacket, and then switches the envoy's supporting side and shrugs out of the other sleeve, letting the jacket fall to the ground. He's basically holding up the envoy between his own body and the wall, and suddenly he's noticing there's more going on than the fever, with what feels very much like a boner pressing into his hip. Does the envoy carry some sort of weaponry he hadn't... He looks up, and the envoy has closed his eyes even behind the mask.
I'm sorry, the envoy says.
Catch up, Xianlan. An echo of the envoy's fever seems to flush through him, adrenaline making the envoy's words sharp and bright in his mind, an answered puzzle that still needs prodding and turning over, but later. Caught up now. The envoy isn't this embarrassed over a hug. That will help,
he asks quietly.
The envoy breathes in sharp and fast,
and the hands on Jae Yun-Lan's clutch tight. "That is currently my understanding," he says, sounding like he has to force the words out, and his obvious mortification makes Jae Yun-Lan feel for him, even beyond the pain of the Yashu poison.
"Okay. Okay,"
he says. He's already got that hood off, and the envoy sways a little when Jae Yun-Lan raises his hands against the pressure of the envoy's grip and pushes the cloak back. Straps and buckles hold the robe underneath in place. Jae Yun-Lan's always thought it was a good outfit, but up close with the visible bulge sticking out and the envoy panting against him, it gains a whole new level of intense. He twists one arm free, gently, and fumbles open the buckle of the envoy's waist. The tug seems to ripple through the envoy. For a giggly moment, Jae Yun-Lan thinks what Lao Chu would say as he pulls at the flap of the robe, testing out the give. He feels pretty certain the envoy would like to be undressed against the wall of a dirty alley as little as possible.
"Can you hold on to me?"
he says, because he'll need his hands. The envoy shudders again, like everything Jae Yun-Lan says makes it worse, and there's more heat coming off him, together with a heavier scent of need and arousal, but he puts his arms around Jae Yun-Lan's shoulders.
"It's cool,"
Jae Yun-Lan mumbles out of some instinct, stroking over the envoy's hair again, the tie of the mask tense and firm in contrast to the soaked fine strands. Then he undoes the buckle on the top leather strap and slips his hand inside the envoy's robe. He means it. He's cool. He's done a few sleazier things in his life, and none of them were with the guy who keeps showing up to bail him out of danger and who acts like if he didn't have to be a mysterious dignitary from the underworld, he'd almost like to be his friend. The envoy's erection is even hotter than the rest of him, and Jae Yun-Lan has to catch his breath for a moment because the mix of concern for the envoy, the logistics of how to angle his arm to move inside the robe, the low lizard response of his own body to the hot dick in his hand, and the fact that he's going to jerk off a black-cloaked envoy in some back alley is messing with his head a little. He gives it a little pull. Circumstances of a panting, shivering envoy and a Yashu mindfuck aside, it feels not that different from the handful of times he's done this, pun definitely not intended. Nothing that strikes him as specifically douche-ingrin, anyway. Not that he's got any sample there. He gives a firmer stroke, and the envoy all but crumbles against him.
"It's okay," Jae Yun-Lan whispers. "I'll never tell anyone."
He's not sure where that came from, but it doesn't matter anyway. The envoy thrusts into his grip, and it's like the burn of good booze inside him. And when the envoy freezes like Jae Yun-Lan caught him at something, Jae Yun-Lan strokes him again, and again, past that stuttering control and into a good, strong rhythm. The envoy's making little noises, a writhing bundle of need plastered against him, and Jae Yun-Lan feels sweat break out all over himself, his t-shirt sticking to his back despite the cool air. The cock in his hand is the urgent side of hard now, even without any finesse on his part, and the envoy's pulling him closer with an erratic grab, making the angle even messier. But even with the fever and the heat, the envoy likes him close, gives a gasp that's sharp and satisfying when Jae Yun-Lan presses against him all over. "Jae Yun-Lan." The envoy is breathing into his neck, a raspy whisper that hits him low in the gut, and he runs his free hand through the envoy's hair. "Holds on," whispers back.
"Come on."
He feels it when it flips, the sharp driving pulse that only wants focus and more speed, and the envoy is jerking in his hand, breaths going even faster and a grip on Jae Yun-Lan's neck that might worry him under other circumstances, but right now it's hot and right, and then the envoy stiffens mid-squirm, a muffled sob and the envoy's cock pulsing in his hand. Most of it goes in Jae Yun-Lan, a wet warmth round about his hip adding to the mess of sweat and burning envoy. It would probably be easier to hide under the cloak than Jae Yun-Lan can hide a wet splotch in his jeans, especially if his own dick takes some time to calm itself. But it feels less inappropriate somehow. "Jae Yun-Lan," the envoy mumbles, thick like he's drunk, a broken softness that doesn't sound like the envoy at all, or like anything else he's ever heard in that voice. That voice. He checks his own breathing, holds on to the envoy, because nothing about the guy suggests he's capable of standing anytime soon, and because his weight feels good, and because he'll be able to feel any response, not just hear.
"Are you okay?"
he asks quietly. The envoy is first shaking his head, and Jae Yun-Lan is almost alarmed, but then it turns into a disoriented nod. I didn't. It should. I'm fine. He's still panting, swaying. Xianlan, are you all right? And in the gloomy light, a disheveled envoy barely pulling himself up from an all-body hug and his careful manner still in pieces, Xianlan can tell. He knows that voice. Look at me, he says. The envoy's sluggish movements stall and some slow motion freeze. The envoy. Look at me. It feels like forever that they're quiet, Xianlan barely breathing, the envoy swaying imperceptibly as a tower in the world's smallest, slowest earthquake. Then he finally raises his head, spiky, sweaty short hair, faded flush, the curve of his cheeks, that mouth, the eyes in their glimmering, terrified sheen. You are fucking kidding me, Xianlan whispers. Shenwei stares at him dark and breathless, before his eyes fall shut and he seems to sink in on himself, weak and broken, and Xianlan tightens his grip again, worry and indignation and fucking finally bouncing and twisting through him, but he's also got to keep Shenwei upright. Are you better now? He asks. Did it help? Because despite Xianlan's mind being blown as high as the moon, they still had a sex-related medical crisis on their hands. After a moment, Shenwei mumbles, I'll be all right. I meant for real. Xianlan gets out, worry currently winning over everything else. If you lie now, I will... I don't know, but I will do something. Shenwei is shaking his head. It required... the contact. It works. I can feel it. He sounds wretched. Contact. Better be safe, just in case the boner was a sideshow. He bundles Shenwei up and pulls him in, and doesn't give a fuck. Let the envoy launch a diplomatic complaint. Just let him. He holds on for long enough that he can feel some control return to Shenwei's limbs, a bit of tension to his spine. All right. Xianlan slowly eases up, letting Shenwei stand. I'm sorry, Shenwei says, and when he raises his eyes to meet Xianlan's, Xianlan knows this time it's the right one. He kind of wants to call him a jerk, but Shenwei, with his hampered exposure to humans, might take him too seriously. You should have told me, he says, sees the guilty flinch. But I'll get over it. He raises his hand, going with instinct, and feeling that after the handjob situation, Shenwei can't really complain, and he brushes over Shenwei's messy hair again. He sees Shenwei swallow, and then he reaches to the back of his head, where there's a thick metal clasp. Shenwei is holding his breath, and then he isn't, and his shoulders come down, a stillness that says yes, it's time. He's done. Xianlan undoes the clasp and pulls the mask off. The mask is left a line along Shenwei's forehead. Shenwei is sweaty and splotchy pale and beautiful, tense and waiting, and Xianlan really doesn't want to kill him so much anymore at all. It's all right, he says. Shenwei is swallowing hard again and blinking, and Xianlan presses the mask into his hands. Shenwei shudders when Xianlan takes the loose buckles on his robe and fastens them again, and Xianlan gets it. It feels almost more intimate than when he slipped them open. Makes sense, though. Now he knows. There's a shiver down his spine. I should... Shenwei's voice is raspy, and there's a new flush in his face. Not from fever. He doesn't avert his eyes, though. Just waits. Embarrassment and nerves and relief right there for Xianlan. No shield. Xianlan will take it. He nods, slipping a hand on Shenwei's shoulder for support just in case. We should get out of here, he says, smiling as Shenwei lets him take some of his weight. Yeah, Let's go home now. The end. Thanks for listening.